Today is February 10th, and we are taping Divrei Hayamim, Bet, Chapter 17. Okay, Asa ruled quite a long time, and he traversed quite a few of the kings of Israel. You have the charts we have of all the kings, and upon Asa's death, his son Yehoshaphat ruled. So we're going to start by Yimloch Yehoshaphat beno Tachtov vayitchazek al Yisrael. Right? Again, this story appears here. Of course, these kings are all mentioned in Divrei Hayamim, in Sefer Melachim, but the elaborations that we have here are not found there. Okay,
so is that the one where they married?
Yes. So far, the two kingdoms were at great odds, one against the other. Right? And they were fighting battles, they were at each other's necks at all times. And in Yehoshaphat's time, there was an attempt to join the kingdoms by having the daughter from the northern kingdom marry the son from the southern kingdom. Okay, the daughter of the king from the north to marry the son of the king from the south. And this produced a terrible tragedy. It was a bad decision. Okay. And again, as you can see from here, this blank space. All right, let's go on. So it says, "Vayiten chayil b'chol arei Yehuda habitzuros." How's it bet? He put chayil, Ashes chayil, gibor chayil. These things can mean a lot. They can do a lot of diverse things in Hebrew. But what it means here is certainly like an army. He made an army. Put soldiers in all the cities of Yehuda. Okay. In all the and he made fortified areas throughout Yehuda. Vayitein netzivim be'eretz Yehuda uva'arei Ephraim asholachad asa aviv. Okay, and netziv comes from the word nitzavim, standing army, people who would stand at attention. Right? Remember Lot's daughter turned into Lot's wife turned into a Nitziv Melach. Nitziv. So these are standing soldiers who would guard the cities of Yehuda, but also the cities of Ephraim.
Okay.
Now right now Yehuda seems to have the upper hand on the northern tribes. They have some of the northern cities. Right? You can bet that the north is gonna want to fight to get them back. As Divrei Hayamim always points out, "Vayhi Hashem im Yehoshaphat pasuk gimel ki holach b'darchei David aviv harishonim v'lo darash l'ba'olim." Look how bad things have gotten. That you have to praise a king because he's not dorish to the ba'olim. I remind you, there are three different stages of what's wrong in Sefer Melachim, and of course Divrei Hayamim is one. There's bamos.
The altars
to God outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Two is the agolot, the eglei zahav. That's only half bad because they were golden calves, but they were also the object of the worship of those golden calves was Hashem, the God who took us out of Egypt. Right? Not dissimilar from what happens at the end of Sefer Shmos. Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher Helucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Right? They didn't think that these golden calves that they just made with their own hands just took them out of Egypt. They thought that this calf represents the God that took them out of Egypt, not unlike the yellow disc in the sky that represents Amun-Ra to the Egyptians. They're not worshipping that yellow disc insofar as it's not a God to itself, it just represents a God. Right? That's two. The third thing, the worst of all, is Baal. Because Baal is hardcore pure Avodah Zarah. As angry as God is in the Torah with the golden calf, right? That's not the worst as it gets here, because at least that golden calf, their attention was to God, to the one God who just took them out of Egypt, who they believed created heaven and earth, who gave a mission to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who kept his promise to take them out of Egypt, right? And even that is considered wrong. Of course, this would be a serious problem with Christianity, right? So a Christian might just disagree with it, with all this. He might disagree with what the golden calf represented. Alright, so that's this. When it says that he was not doresh to the Be'alim, then it means that he wasn't doing this third terrible thing. Yes?
Why did he choose a golden calf and not anything else?
Probably because that's what they were used to in Egypt. Right. They might have made a golden, a golden goat or a golden sheep or something. But that's probably what they were used to. Tavnit shor ochel esev, it says, until... Some things that they're used to. What confounds us is that those bulls that were on standing under the water towers in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a little strange, right? Okay. Ki lelokei aviv dorash uv'mitzvosav halach v'lo kemaaseh Yisrael. He sought dorash, means he really sought with in depth. Dorash, the God of his father, Asa, and he walked in his mitzvahs, but he did not do like the way the kings of Israel were doing, those bad kings from the north. Right? V'lo kemaaseh Yisrael. A little poetic. Right? V'yochen Hashem es hamamlecho biyado. See what the shorosh of v'yochen is?
Kind of.
It's like made it a foundation. Right? What does your English say there? Bayochen.
Established.
Established, good. Okay, the word king, meaning yes, is from this. King. Benos Slavchot, right? Kana is the base of the wash basin, basin of the dish. Right? Of the kior. Alright, so Bayochen, it's not from the word Nachon or even Heichin. Kavona comes from this. Alright, so God established his throne, Biado, in his own hands. But it's new kol yudam in chol yushafat. What does that mean? You give your king tribute. Everyone paid taxes. Everyone gave him gifts. Vahilo oshiv kavod larov. This is typical Dirayamim. You turn to God, you do the mitzvahs, you're going to come to osher and kavod. Vayigbali bo b'darchei Hashem. Oh no, why does this always have to happen? Right? What often comes on the heels of Osher and Kavod? Gaiva. Your heart gets high and you forget God, right? So Vayishman Yishurun Vayivod. Yishurun gets fat and they kick. Right? One of the most devastating single decisions for American Jewry, or at least the New York Jewry, was a decision made in the early 50s by the conservative movement that it's better to drive to shul than to stay at home. Mm. Right? This was a tshuva that was written for the Jews who moved out to Long Island, where there were no zoning for shuls nearby. So if your nearest shul is 25 miles away, drive to shul, better have a short Shabbos morning experience. And these people smelled a rat. They knew there was something wrong with that. Instead, the psak should have been, don't move out to a place that far away until it's zoned for a shul. Those places now are like Yulet, and there are many shul. There are yeshivas all out there now. Five towns and Long Beach. But what precipitated this whole turn away from Yiddishkeit? These people were keeping Shabbos. They were keeping kashrus. They were going to mikveh. But when they moved out to places where these things weren't available, how long do you think it was before they weren't keeping any of these things? And you think their children are doing any? But I ask you, what precipitated the whole Indian in the first place?
They got rich
and were able to move out of the... They were able to move out of the Lower East Side. They were able to move out of the Bronx. Right? Where they lived before, there was a shul in walking distance. Now you're moving on because, well, I don't have any cause for this. I don't have any purpose for these Orthodox. Let me ask the conservative rabbi what to do. And they were interested. I've spoken to a number of people who were in that genre, who moved out to Peekskill and Jericho, and And they had to drive to Shul.
The guy in Hunter made them all walk. I said, don't come to Shul if you're not walking.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Well, anyone who lived in Hunter was not more than a 10 or 15 minute walk from the Shul, was he?
The president of the Shul was a couple of miles outside. Oh, he said, don't come to Shul if you're going to drive.
The Shul was functioning during the year, too?
No, the Shul never functioned during the year. Now it functions more often than it did used to. Yeah.
Because people use it when they go skiing?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. All right, so let's go on. So it's very typical. And that's why whenever it says in Dvarim, V'chalto v'savata, V'hishamru lochem, pen yiftel levavchem, every time. Not just in the Shema, which I just said, which you're familiar with, but whenever it says you're full, if you're satisfied, be careful. What comes after that kind of is.
I was thinking, if you were to move to a place where there was no Jewish community, where you would have no minyan and no shul, do you think you would stop keeping Shabbat and kashrus?
So I wouldn't move to such a place. I mean, before I decide where to move, I make up that mind.
But let's say if
you're
family
forced
to
such
you
a
end up there.
You don't end up there unless you want to end up there.
What's interesting is there is a mission at the end of Pirkei Avos. You familiar with this mission of Yossi ben Kisma? It's a very strange mission. He's walking, he says, I was once walking down the street and someone came up to me and said, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe, and I said, Shalom Aleichem Rebbe, and he said, where are you from? And I said, I'm from a place with a lot of Torah and a lot of mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. It's too long. This whole mission is too long. It's a mishnah, for goodness sake. Mishnahs are concise. So he said, would you like to come to where I live? And he said, I wouldn't live in a place where there's no Torah if you give me all the gold and silver and jewels in the whole world. And he goes on and on to explain what did the guy say? He said, you want to come to my place? And what's wrong with being Makari of people and spreading Torah like Lubavitch does? So basically, you know what I'm talking about, right? It's the very end of Pirkei Avos. All right, so the answer is, you know, Lubavitch sends Mishulachim all over the place.
But they go for their kids.
Yeah, yeah. And some of these places, they taka don't have a minion. They only have a minion on Shabbos. They, you know. Okay, but the answer is...
Ugandans was like that when we came.
Yeah. Okay.
So you had to import people to make a minyan there every Shabbos. And they did.
Yep. All right, so that's the answer. All right, so he says, V'yikbali bo b'darchei Hashem, v'od heisir es habamos ves asherim Yehuda. Now, here it says, it's just the beginning of it. So, but here, I gave you this whole introduction here, but here it's V'yikbali bo b'darchei Hashem.
Sounds good.
In other words, it's good. Yeah, okay. We'll see where that's going to go. His heart became
elevated.
Elevated is good, yeah.
Elevated is right. What it says.
Elongated and elevated in the ways of God. But Ode Sirus Abamos Vesasher Mihuda. So he got rid of the Bamos, which is, you know, for God, but it's a service to God outside of the temple. And he got rid of Asherim, which is Baal, which is Asherim is Avodah Zarah. Right? Asherim, what types of trees that they used to plant to worship under them. And there was fertility issues with respect to them as well. Okay. Uvishnah shalosh l'mocho, shalach l'sarav l'ben chayil. And in the third year of his kingdom, he sent these messages for these people, l'ovadio l'zacharia ul'nesanel ul'michoyhu l'lameid be'orei Yehuda. So Vistama Ben Chayil is the name of a person. Right? And it says, Lilameid Be'orei Yehuda. Lilameid what? What would you think?
Torah.
Yeah. Okay, let's continue reading and show. Imahem halavim Shmayahu Nesanyahu Uzvadyahu Ba'asoel Shmiramos Vihonasan Vadonyahu Vitobiyahu Vitov Adonia Halavim Vimahem Elishama Vihoram Akoanim. You see, these are common names with the Yud Nehe or an Aleph and a Lamed. Most men had those names then. Right? Ve'yelamdu b'Yehuda v'imayim sefer Torah Hashem ve'yasobu b'chol arei Yehuda ve'yelamdu ba'am. and they taught them the Torah of Moshe, the Torah of Hashem. Right? And he turned all around Yehuda to teach the people the Torah. Now this pasuk, of course, is very confounding to the Bible critics. Because Bible critics claim that the Torah's origins are hundreds of years later. So what do they do with such a pasuk? Right? So, look, there are 100 psukim like this in the Nevi'im. You know, we're going to see soon that there was an assassination, and the king only killed those who were involved in the assassination, not their children. Kakasur betoras Moshe ki ish bechato yomusu. Not yomusu, but it's yomusu. But so what they do with this? So they say, oh, it's all anachronistic. Someone else put it in later to make it look like it was all. Come on, once you're, it's like their opinion about the origins of the Torah is ideological. I understand why my opinion of the Torah is ideological. I'm an ideologue. I agree. I admit, but their opinion of the Torah not being in its time is like it's an ideology to them. So to the point, because when you're an ideologue, you'll continue holding your opinion even in the face of what appears to be incontrovertible, something that proves it wrong, right? Because you'll keep proposing what you think. Okay, so he says that the fear of God was put upon all the kingdoms surrounding Judah. And no one wanted to fight Yehoshaphat. Great, he has a beautiful name, and he's a good king. Umin plishtim aviim Yehoshaphat mincha bekesef masa, and the plishtim brought him tribute. Right, gam ha'arviim aviim lo tzom neilim, and the Arabs also brought him tribute of cattle and sheep. Shivat alafim u'shvameot. Wow, 7,700. Oh, pretty amazing. Rams, 7,700 sheep. That's a lot. V'yushafot holich v'godel ad l'mala. V'yivan v'yuda b'ranios v'arei miskinos. Yehoshaphat kept on getting higher and higher, and he built b'ranios, like from the word b'ra, right? Are miskinos and treasure cities, and storehouses. Okay, it's a pretty good story here. Umalachora bahayalo be Arei Yehuda, and Shemil Chamagi be Arei Chayal be Yerushalayim. There was great work to do in all the cities of Yehuda, and there were many men of war and many men of valor, even though they didn't really need them, because it said in a few pesukim before that no one fought them.
You don't fight somebody who has a standing army.
And you don't fight someone who you feel. The world doesn't act that way now. But if everyone would just leave Israel alone and just do commerce with it and allow Israel to help them with their own economies, the whole Middle East could flourish the way Israel flourishes, without a need for all their armies. But they can't live that way. Right? Okay, so by Eilat Kudasam leveisav osehem liyuda sere alafim Adno Hashar viimogi borechayel shlosh meos olaf. Did you ever hear this name, Adno? I thought Edno was like a girl's name. There's a man named Adno. He was the one in charge of an army of 300,000 men. Quite a garrison. Ba'al yado Yehochanan Hashar viimom masayim ushmonim olaf. And Yehochanan, led a garrison of 280,000 men. V'yado Amasya ben Zichri hamisnadev l'Hashem, v'imom asayim elav gibor chayel. And this guy, misnadev l'Hashem, the volunteer. Maybe he wasn't being paid. Umin binyamin gibor chayel el yado v'imom noshke keshes umagen masayim elav. Another 200,000. V'yado Yehozavod v'imom me'av eshmonim elav chalutzei tzavo. Another 180,000 with this guy. Eila ha'mashusim es ha'melech milvadash nesan ha'melech b'aviyam b'vtzer b'chol Yehuda. These are the people who served the king and prepared him for battle. It shows that when you want to succeed in your internal objectives, and he was building up the cities of Yehuda. You have to be very careful to have your main security. You have to maintain your may be a threat from outside the nation, right?
No, it's full employment. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. They had come home with the salary. They're not going to make any trouble.
Well, that's true, but internally, but you have to make sure that no one from outside.
Outside it looks very dangerous, but from the inside there it's full employment.
Well, you kept a significant standing army with all these men, right?
That's expensive.
Yeah. Now, remember there was something called a peace dividend. Do you remember that? Remember that was called a peace dividend. When the former Soviet Union fell, we were promised that we would now have a peace dividend. Have you heard that?
Yeah, but I don't.
We wouldn't have to spend so much time on defense. Uh-huh. So much. We now see that the Russian attempt at raising the arms race in the 50s and 60s was not meant to attack America. It was meant to destroy the economy of America. That we would have to so profusely build the infrastructure to defend against a possible attack that would seriously weaken our economy. Whereas the Russians weren't worried about such weakness because they knew that their people could live with the most meager of subsistence without raising any complaints because A, they didn't know what the rest of the world is like. You know, the average North Korean is convinced that their life is much better than everyone outside the rest of the world. The only thing that they're there, they made studies of a few that we can get our hands on. They think there are about somewhere between 7 and 10 other countries outside of North Korea. And that their lives are profoundly better than everyone else. Everyone else lives like an animal looking for a place to live, is homeless. We have a house, we have a place to go home to, and then close the door. Right? So the Russians, they felt that we could... Our people won't complain. Let's weaken the economy of Americans. The Americans have an open society. They know what's going on. They can see what. So they'll complain. They will run them into the ground. It didn't happen.
On the contrary, it lifted up the economy.
Yeah. Okay. Vahili shofot osher v'kavod larova yischatein la'achav. Uh-oh. So he had this great osher and kavod, and he v'yischatein means he made a shidduch with Achav. Achav's daughter married Yehoshaphat's son. Ve'erid l'keitz shanim el Achav l'shomron ve'izbach lo Achav tzon uvakor l'rov v'lo om asherimo ve'yisiteu la'alos al Ramos Gilad. So, after some years, he went down to Achav, to Shomron. Here, this Vayered, do you get the word Vayered here? It's not really, he went down, because from Yehuda to Achav is going up. But Yerid means like a Yerida.
The spiritual level went down.
Okay. So Achav, like, Besiteo means to, like, seduce. He convinced him to come to a place called Ramot Gilad. It's in the north. Ve'yomer Achav el Melech Yisrael el Yehoshaphat, Melech Yehuda. Hatelechim mi Ramot Gilad, v'yemer li lo kamoni, kamocha, kamcha ami, v'yimcha b'milchama. He said, well, we're mechatanim, right? We're in-laws, so I'll help you. My horses are your horses, my army is your army. Let's do this together. We're cousins after all. Now, on the face of it, there's nothing wrong with this, right? What's wrong with unifying the tribes? Right? Nothing at all. It's just that Achav is a very bad guy. So Yehoshaphat said, let's seek God's advice about how to win this battle. So they gathered 400 prophets. They asked the prophets, shall we go to Ramot Gilad to battle? or not? Mechdal, should I stop? Should I stay behind? And they all said, go up. God has given you, given them to you and to be in your hands. You'll win. V'amei Yoshafat, ha'in po navi l'Hashem od v'nidrashame oto? Why would he want to have another navi if they already asked 400?
That's when you ask a child of another
God. They didn't trust the 400. These are bad guys. These are priests of Baal. These are prophets of Baal. He said, can we get a prophet with a good reputation, a Torah reputation?
So that was like Eliyahu also was 400?
Yes, yes, we'll see. Although his prophet is not Eliyahu, it's his student, Michayu. Let me know Shafat. Is there another Navi? Remember Melech Yisrael Shafat. Odi Shechod Lidroshes Hashem Eoso. Vanisne Siu. I hate him. I hate a prophet who doesn't speak well of me. Ki enenu misnabe olai letova. Ki chol yomav l'ra'avim hu. He never says good things about me or for me. Because everything he says is bad. Michayu ben Yimlo. His name is Michayu ben Yimlo. V'imei Yoshafot, al yomar ha-melech kein. Do not let the king speak this way about him. V'ikor melech Yisrael al siris echad v'imer maher Michayu ben Yimlo. And he went to one of his officials and he said, please, quickly, bring this guy. Okay. Melech Yisrael v'Yoshafot, melech Yehuda v'Yoshfim, ish al kiso, mulu bashim begodim. And the two kings were sitting outdoors on thrones, wearing their kingly garments, their royal garments. V'yoshvim begorin Pesach Shar Shomron. V'chol nevim isnabim lifnehem. This is a ritual that the two kingdoms are together. They're on the same side, and all these prophets were prophesying before them. Okay, now look at this one guy. Tzidkiyaslo tzidkiyahu v'knano karne barzel. This is a false prophet. You'll see, he took iron horns. With these we shall gore the Arameans until we destroy them. And all the prophets gave such prophecy. And they said, we'll succeed if we go down. Now this story is in Malachim. Right? This story is in Malachim. But the story before it is not in Malachim. Story about Naboth's vineyard. Oh, I'm sorry. Story of Naboth's vineyard is in Malachim, but not here, I'm saying. That's what I meant to say.
They skipped it. In other words, they don't show you how evil Ahab is here before they mention him.
Well, because our book doesn't have so many stories about the northern kings. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so this guy, Sidkiyo ben Kanana, he's speaking falsely, and he says, thus have I broken the smashed the Arameans until they're destroyed. Right? And all the prophets agreed. V'amalach asher alach likro l'michoyu diber elav lemor, hinei divrei hanavim pe'echod tov el ha-melech. And the messenger told Micha ben Yimla that every single one of those 400 prophets is saying something good that the king wants to hear. What do you have to say? Make sure that you don't depart from what they're saying. Speak well. He has asked for your opinion. He's asked Tavka for your opinion.
Okay.
Yes, I'm trying to switch quickly. Chai Hashem, ki is Hashem Yomar Elokai Osoa Deber. I'm not going to say what's good for the king. I'm not going to say what's bad for the king. I'm just going to say whatever God tells me. Okay. Ve'evo l'melech ve'yemar ha'melech elav. Micha, ha'neilecha Ramos Gilod l'melech ha'mayim echdol. Micha, should I go up to battle with Ramos Gilod or not? He said, go up and succeed, and God will give you in their hands. Now, that sounds like what everyone else is saying, no?
Yeah.
but he didn't tell him to take those horns.
No, he wasn't as emphatic as the other guy. But look what he says. V'yemari lov ha-melech. Ad kame pa'amim ani mashpiyacho asher lo tedaber elai rak emes b'shem Hashem. So apparently, Achav was able to detect a note of sarcasm in Micha's, because Micha's about to admit, no, it's not going to be successful. But I know you're not going to listen to me.
Is Yehoshaphat here too?
Yeah. Yeah. But why would Achav, you know, Achav, he has 400 prophets saying, go up, it'll be successful. And then he wants to hear one more who he has a lot of reservations about him for various reasons. And when he says the same thing, Achav is like, is upset. What are you upset about? He's telling you what everyone else is saying.
Because Yehoshaphat will probably detect the sarcasm.
Or that Achav himself detected the sarcasm. So this is what he says. Ve'yomer, Ro'isias kol Yisrael, this is in Malachim. Micha said, Ro'isias kol Yisrael nefotsim alei horim, katzon asher in lahem ro'eh. I see all of Israel scattered around the mountains and the hills, like sheep without a shepherd. He said, these people have no leaders, they have no guides. And he said, take them back, let them go back to their houses. Right? I told you he's going to say bad things about me. Even when he started saying that we're going to succeed, look what he's saying now.
Go home.
He's saying that the soldiers should go home. If we were going to be successful, he wouldn't say to do that. It's not like Gidon that says, you know, a lot of people should go home. This is a very famous story. Rashi makes reference to this story in Bereshis when he speaks about God having a Beis Din. Have you heard of that? God has a Beis Din Shamala. You've heard of that? That God, and he confers with angels. That's from here. This is the story. So God is sitting around his throne with all the angels, myriads of angels surrounding him, and God says, "V'yemar Hashem, mi yifate'es Achav melech Yisrael v'yalvu yipol b'ramos gilad." V'yemar zeh omer kocha v'zeh omer kocha. God looks out at all the angels and all the spirits, and he said, "Who's going to go down to the world and convince?" This is all Micha talking, saying to the kings, "Who's going to convince Achav that he should go out to battle, which will be tragic for him?" So each angel said this, each angel said that, right? One said this, one said that, each one right? So one spirit came before God. Remember what the Medrash says this spirit is? This is the spirit of Navot, who was killed by Achav for his vineyard. Remember that? Okay, so the spirit of Navot said, "I will seduce him to go to battle against Ramot Gilad." And God said, "How will you seduce him?" Now everything is coming together. I'm going to make myself a spirit of a lie in the mouths of all of his prophets, and make 400 of them convince him that he can go out and fight. This is Micha telling him, you know, when I told you, when you detected sarcasm, you were right. I know this isn't going to succeed. I'm a Navi. He said, go seduce him. You'll succeed. Go out and do it. Okay. Now, here's the point. It's not that the prophets know that this battle won't succeed, but they're lying. No. These prophets have all been imbued with the prophecy in their head that it's a good idea to fight up there. So they're all going to speak as if though this is a real prophecy. And he can detect that in them, that they're really speaking what they believe to be true. They can still be wrong, but they believe they're saying what's right. As opposed to Micha, who's telling the BS.
Why did he even
why did he allow Mikhail to come?
Because Yehoshaphat suggested.
But still, I mean, he knew what was going to happen.
You know, we're teammates now, so you think that he's a... You know, you want to hear from one more.
You have Clinton sitting there and he says he wants this one. You say yes.
When 400 prophets say the same thing, you got to hear another opinion. You ever hear of this halacha? That a court case involving 23 judges, that's a capital cases need 23 judges.
You have to have one person who is opposed.
Right. If all 23 say guilty.
Feel like it was first.
That's how you got elected to be a rabbi of this shul.
Your father, I know.
And they came up with that story just then and there.
I mean, it's the Meiri can't. Meiri doesn't accept it. The Meiri says when it says in the Gemara, Chof Gimel Mechayevin Potrino Somiyad. Right? You get it? You hear what it means? Chof Gimel Mechayevin Potrino Somiyad. If all 23 say guilty, so what does Potrino Somiyad mean?
Then you had better look at the situation again.
So that's what he's saying. But the Meiri says no. Potrino Somiyad means we nifter him right away.
Oh, like that.
Potrino means to nifter. In other words, everyone else who's like 18 guilty and 5 innocent. So we still
we'll haggle.
We'll see. No. This is all death penalty.
Oh, it's all
death penalties. Yeah. So then we'll give it some more time. We'll see if there's more evidence. But when 23 say guilty. Don't look for more evidence. It's so obvious this guy's guilty. But that's not what the Rambam says. That's a commentary to the Gemara on that Gemara.
Because it's anonymous and you need at least one.
Right, so something as horrific as taking a human life, even though he took a human life, or he did something that warrants the death penalty, something as serious as taking a human life cannot have no debate. Cannot have someone on the other side. Right? So 400 prophets all say this is a good idea. Don't you think something's wrong here?
Yeah.
So some of them would get it wrong.
Shouldn't there be some debate over whether we should fight this battle with Ramah Gilead?
Yeah, that's what I say. Witnesses, like, you know, when there are witnesses and let's say show up in a trial or something, there's usually a difference in detail that each one will see it from a different perspective, but if they all say the same thing, then you know that
they must have. It's conspiracy.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Did that show up on your test?
No. The test is nothing like that.
Okay. So. So we said. So now everyone can figure out what Michal is saying, is that all these 400 guys who are telling you to succeed, that's the spirit of the lie that God put into the mouths of these prophets. You shouldn't believe them, right? You get it?
With this prophet going along with, you know, trying to get this bad king to go to war. When he first said, go.
Yeah, that's going to ultimately happen. You'll see what. There's a lot of Malachim Aleph that's not in here, but.
Maybe he was scared. He knew what would happen to him.
So, what happened immediately? Look at Pasuk Chof Gimel. You see the immediate reaction. And he punched him in the cheek. See which way you've passed the Spirit of God. He's claiming, I have the Spirit of God. This is the same Sidkiah ben Kenana who took the horn before and said, don't, you know, all the prophets agree with what I said, that we're about to wipe out Aram in Ramot Gilad. Okay. So Michahu said, yeah, you want to scare me? I'll tell you what to be scared of. The enemy will come into the rooms of your homes. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, in other words, they're going to make their way into this city, they're going to break the walls of the city, and they're going to have their way go into every home and take out whatever they want. Cheder b'cheder. And you're going to have to go room to room to hide, because they're going to make their way into these places. So said, take this man, Michayu. This is Ahav talking. And bring him to the officer of the city and to my son Yoash. Amartim Komar HaMelech, Simu Ze Beis HaKela, V'chilu Lechem Lachatz, Mayim Lachatz, Et Shuvi B'Shalom. So he says, take this man, your Beis HaKela is a jail. Take him to jail. The word Kelayim comes from here. Take him to jail. Adonim Moshe Kelayim. So it says, take him to jail and give him Lechem Lachatz, Mayim Lachatz. What does that mean?
Little of everything.
Just a little bit. Lechatz means pressured, pressed. Just very little bread, very little water. Until I come back in peace. And look at the you know, Michayu is a lot of chutzpah. Look how he's telling the king. Beautiful. I love this next pasuk. It's beautiful. If you return in peace, that means that God didn't speak to me, because God told me that you're not returning in peace. Should I give you a spoiler?
They go out probably.
Yes. Okay, let's read. He said, "If you do return in peace, God didn't talk to me." And the king of Israel went with Yehoshaphat to fight against Ramoth Gilead. Now, in Sefer Melachim, you have to know some just background information, is that the Arameans despised Ahav. They despised Ahav. They only wanted to kill Ahav. They did not care to fight against the average Israelite in this battle. They just wanted Ahav. Now, Ahav, being the coward that he is, was Vitchapes. He wore a disguise. Yehoshaphat didn't. Yehoshaphat went to battle and dressed as king. But Ahav disguised.
But why did he go to battle after hearing the last prophet?
He didn't trust him. He didn't believe him. He believed the 400.
Yehoshaphat didn't believe him?
No. Oh, why did Yehoshaphat go to battle?
Yeah.
Ahav.
He didn't really fight with the 400. And then he...
Was it just
because
they had this
relationship,
familiar relationship?
Well, let's read the next few psukim. It's a good question, because Yehoshaphat is definitely part of the battle, as you'll see in a minute. Take a look. Alright. It says, Ve'yal melech Yisrael v'Yehoshaphat melech Yehuda al Ramoth Gilead. They did go up to Ramoth Gilead. They went to fight. Ve'yal melech Yisrael v'Yehoshaphat hitchapes v'avo b'melchama v'atar l'vash v'gadecha. Ve'yitchapes melech Yisrael v'yavo b'melchama. What is this? This pasuk is crazy. The king of Israel, notice that it says Vayal Melech Israel, Vayomer Melech Israel. What does this show? Vayichapes Melech Israel.
That he wasn't in charge.
Or that the author of this text hates him so much they want to mention his name.
No.
Right? They don't mind mentioning Yehoshaphat, but they don't want to mention his name.
What about the whole thing you tell him?
Oh,
hi, the
king. Oh, in disguise, and you, yeah.
That's
Shlub.
Some
chutzpah. Beit chapeis melech Yisrael ve'yavob ha'melchama. So Ahav was disguised. Melech Aram tziva asari ha'rechev asher lo le'mor. Lo tilachamu yiskaton yiskadol. Ki mes melech Yisrael levado. Don't fight after any of the Israelites.
Just
get
the king.
You win. You win the chess game by taking off the pieces, but just by
taking
off the game. And they ran into Yehoshaphat wearing a crown. Melch Yisrael, who? This is the king of Israel, let's get him. They saw Bo lovely Lachim, they surrounded him.
Ah,
Hashem
saved him.
This is a fascinating, because this is the way it says in Divrei Yomim. In Melachim, in Melachim, it says, it didn't involve anything like any prayer. It just says that when they came up to Yehoshaphat, they said, there's the king of Israel. And he said, no, I'm the king of Yehuda. And someone recognized, oh yeah, you're right, he's not the king of Israel, let's leave him alone. And they continued fighting. When they not recognized that it wasn't the king of Israel, it was Ahav, they turned away. A person shot an arrow, latumo. Latumo means to perfection, to finish him off. Vayachas melech Yisrael bein hadvokim ubein hashirion. And just imagine from a far distance, the arrow just went in between the scales. You know, you wore.
When you shot the arrow, did he know who it was or
no,
by accident?
No, yeah, he just shot an arrow in the direction of, and the arrow, many arrows were shot there. And the arrow went right between the armor, and it hit him and mortally wounded him. Vayomer Lavarkov, and he said to his driver, Hafoch yodchav al tzesani min hamachanek yichlesi. To turn around and remove me from this camp because I am very sick. Vatala melchama b'yamahu amelch Yisrael hayom ha'amid b'merkavo nochach haram ad ha'erev v'yomos la'is bo ha'shamesh. The battle became more fierce, and the king of Israel went into the chariot opposite Aram till that evening, and he died just as the sun was setting. And that is the end of Achav. So notice that the Divrei Hayamim has a lot of stories that Malachim doesn't have, and Malachim has stories that Divrei Hayamim doesn't have.
That's why we wanted to learn it with you.
All of this is an agenda. It's all an agenda. Divrei Hayamim has a different, very different agenda than Shmuel and Malachim. Shmuel has an agenda, Shmuel bet, especially to show how David succeeds before the Maaseh with Bathsheba, but how
afterwards.
He... afterwards. And Divrei Hayamim does not even want to mention Bathsheba. Doesn't even make reference to any part of the story. The two chapters are totally missing. So Divrei Hayamim has a very virile and very, David is full of vitality, and he ends his life. And he doesn't have to go over to his son and to tell him about who to get even with. He doesn't get cold. He's not this old man who needs a young woman to keep him warm. That's the agenda of... They're both correct, but they're both telling parts of a narrative of a person from different directions to capture... we all have different narratives in our lives.
That's when you read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, it comes out the same.
Okay, so that will close chapter 18. Sheila, I'm pretty sure we know where to start next week.
I better write it down. You're the only one who knows.
Right. Chapter 19.
Where else did you say about Brahma?
We did. Oh, no, I left before it came. Yeah.